Long past the hour for quitting labour, amid the smoke-filled haze of the south gate, the after-lodge crew continues to linger in the rubbish of the temple, under the watchful eyes of Right Worshipful Grand Censor Bob. Not recognised nor endorsed by any grand or subordinate lodge of regular masons, irregular masons, co-masons, Canadian masons, or internet wannabe masons, they banter on as always. Puffing cigars, drinking stale coffee, making terrible jokes, studying agency law, spreading the intemperance and excesses of digital masonry, and generally disappointing all 7 of their podcast subscribers. Do yourself a favour and stop listening now. Only trolls and masochists dare to eavesdrop upon this after lodge banter.
Okay.
Remember that nobody's better than anyone else here.
Give me some time to think it over.
Look what they do to you, look what they do to me. You must be joking if you think that either one is free here.
Welcome to episode 163 of the After Lodge podcast, brought to you again from the bowels of the Googleplex, the realm of digital Freemasonry, and the Freemasonry IRC, where tonight we are joined there as well as on the show by our friend and brother, Father Anthony Silva. I don't want to butcher your name, brother.
Silvia, that's okay. Everybody calls me Silva.
Okay. Well, you know, it's... us bumpkins out from the hills of Pennsylvania, we butcher everyone's name. We're joined this evening, as always, by worshipful producer Bruce.
Gentlemen, good evening.
And Nick, who doesn't want to be ass producer Nick, but is doing the job nonetheless. Hi, Nick.
I'm pretty sure I'm the best butt producer you've ever had in your life.
Butt producer? What are you doing? It's an abbreviation for assistant.
I'll have you know we've had several ass producers, Nick.
Yeah.
And among them, I am top ranked.
You're in the top 5 at least.
You're definitely the flavor of the day.
Thank you.
I don't think that's a compliment, Arlen.
I guess we wanted to start by allowing our special guest to introduce himself and tell us a little bit about his affiliation with the craft and what he does outside of the craft and, well, anything else he may want to introduce. So, Father?
Thank you very much. So I am a Mason from Massachusetts. Shout out to Sagahue Lodge in Haverhill, Massachusetts. A lot of nice guys there and some good fellowship. I'm also in the York Rite, all 3 York Rite bodies, which is where I met Nick, actually. So, you know, we've been hanging out when he was here in Massachusetts, and we miss him terribly. I am a priest in the Apostolic Johannite Church, which is a Gnostic Christian church, and I'm involved in other kind of weird fringe things that people in Masonry like to talk about.
A lot of esoterica, if you will.
Yes, yes. I like to say that I'm in good company with a lot of my fellow weirdos.
So
you certainly are on this show.
That's a great way to describe it. Oh, I miss you guys so much up there.
I don't know. Have I ever mentioned that before that I miss Massachusetts Masons?
Yes, you mention that every single show, usually in the context of besmirching your Floridian brethren.
I do not besmirch
any. Usually it's more of a backhanded insult to Florida than backhanded compliment to, but we get it.
Well, it wasn't very long ago where Florida banned Gnostics from Freemasonry, so.
That got lifted?
There you go.
It did get lifted. It got lifted.
Okay, I still thought that was a thing.
No, it got lifted. I think that only lasted a few months. And one Grand Lodge session, I believe.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure if I said that word to mostly everybody down here, they'd be like, what?
Sure. Well, first they'd say agnostic, and then you'd be like, well, no. Welcome to my world.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Gnosticism is one of those phrases that has been prattled about by people who may or may not be well-meaning in each case, but probably shouldn't be using that phrase.
Well,
the same thing as we were talking about before the show is often done with Kabbalah.
Yes.
It just gets thrown on everything that you want to sound mystical and special.
That is true. And I think that given that gnosis is just a regular old word in Greek means knowledge, it can be applied to lots of things. Some of the things that it has been applied to in recent memory are unpleasant, and some not. So, what can you do? You can't own a single Greek word, I guess. Well, you're a lawyer, maybe you can. I don't know.
yeah, not that one. Okay. There are some things. The Kabbalah thing has already been tried. I'm sure Gnosticism has, just like Freemasonry has made its way through the courts. And the consistent thing is the holding's always something that old that's been splintered that many times. We're not going to let anybody own it because the court isn't equipped to decide who the owner should be.
Right.
Which is a prudent thing for a judge to decide. But
yes. Yeah.
And if it doesn't work for me.
And the Golden Dawn is thankful.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Well, they abuse both of those. Well, I don't want to say abuse. I don't know as much about the Golden Dawn, but they
vigorously assert their copyright claims that. Yeah.
Yes. They also, I think, as I understand, they've got that that Gnosticism Kabbalah cocktail going on, right?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Which, I guess, in a sense, Freemasonry being what it is. I don't know if it really contains a mixture of both, or I prefer to think it's something else that draws parallels with them, because Freemasonry is so enigmatic. In it, I can't talk today. Great, it's a little too much Seder wine. It's too enigmatic. I give up. You guys know what I mean.
Sure, and I think
really threw a label on.
Yeah, but the thing about it is there's a kind of esoteric undercurrent to everything, right? So whether you call it Gnosticism, whether you call it Kabbalah, whether you call it mysticism, whatever it is, those traditions like Freemasonry that actively call upon those things, consciously or not, you know, I don't know if the framers of Masonic ritual got together and said, all right, how can we make this thing Gnostic and hermetic and alchemical and all that stuff? But that stuff exists, and the symbols were in the air, and they kind of drifted in.
Well, our rituals kind of allude to the idea that Freemasonry contains something that predates all of these things, like that early civilization mysticism.
Right, Atlantis, of course.
I don't know about Atlantis, I but it's some, because a lot of these mystery schools share some pretty common threads.
Mm-hmm.
So I could almost buy that argument, except for, you know, the complete lack of proof of Freemasonry being that old. And the reason I say complete lack of proof is the last show I went on about how there's a complete lack of proof about a few things. And then I was overwhelmed with emails and messages of guys delivering me resources most of which I had already seen, but some of them were, there were some real nuggets in there. So thanks, brothers. I'm still delving those resources to see if I can prove myself wrong, but I'm calling that out again. Is can anybody have the craft predate the mysticism of the early, I guess, since Brother Tony's here, I would say original Christians, or the mystic Hebrews, or the Hermetic philosophers? Because if you can, I'd love to have evidence to that effect.
Well, I don't want to blow your mind. I don't know if you guys knew this, but did you know that George Washington was a Freemason?
Gosh, I knew that. That kills me.
No way.
I really hope you're kidding. If you're not killing,
oh, funny guy.
Okay. That Jesuit SOB gave birth to America.
Literal birth.
Freemason.
Literally. Gosh, that is a massive cup. What do you have in that cup?
That is a really large cup. That's got to be a teacup. Okay, yeah.
It's good for the throat.
Yeah, Nick, you were. I didn't think that triathletes got sick.
Yeah. So everybody listening, sorry if I sound terrible tonight.
What did you skip biking for a day or something?
No, apparently my coach says I was working out too hard, combined with my addiction to Red Bull and my complete garbage of a diet, led me to be sick 2 weeks before my race. So. Yay.
I'm kind of surprised you drink Red Bull, honestly.
I'm addicted to that stuff.
Really? Yeah, it's incredibly addictive. I had to kick my Red Bull habits, and I have a lot of bad habits, but that one couldn't stay. It was literally killing me.
Yeah. You know it's bad when you have a case of Red Bull at your desk and an espresso machine, just in case.
And this is coming from a frequent tobacco product abuser. I had to kick the Red Bull habit. Mm. So yeah, I get it. It's hard to let go of, man.
Yeah. But anyway, not the point.
We don't really have a point, do we?
No. Nick got sick because he stopped using his medicine for a day, which is Red Bull, apparently.
Bruce will take care of you later, provided, of course, that the price is right.
I have a different kind of medicine, but I can promise you it works way better than Red Bull. What are we talking about here, guys? Because
I don't know. Hey, okay. Tony, you mentioned your involvement with your lodge. I was curious about how active you are within the local Masonic community. I mean, are you one of the guys that we love who's super committed to his local Blue Lodge, or are you some guy like the millennial Freemason who has a pile of dues cards 6 inches tall?
I wish I could be more active. My day job has me working nights, actually, so I have not made it to Lodge in a few months, unfortunately. Wow. But I would be there as much as I could if it were possible. And yeah, I'm, in addition to the Blue Lodge, like I said, the three York Rite bodies, and that's it for me.
Did you do Scottish Rite?
No, not Scottish Rite.
That was going to be my next question because you, well, wait, so Mass is in the Northern
Jersey. Yep. Red.
I was going to say the Scottish Rite would love you.
And someday I hope to join the Scottish Rite. I don't have a lot of strong feelings about Northern versus Southern, you know. But from what I hear, yeah, well, from what I hear, the Southern jurisdiction talks about more of the things that I'm interested in.
Oh, really?
Without leveling any accusations between jurisdictions, because I can't and should not do that. The Southern jurisdiction is much more apt with the esoteric side of Masonry.
Mm-hmm. Not as afraid of a pipe.
Never really experienced the Northern jurisdiction degrees. I've read about them, but I haven't been in a Northern Scottish Rite Valley while they were doing them. So
interesting.
Speaking of Masonic involvement, Worshipful, I need you to help me with something important. What I have here... Well, I'm going to flip this page around so it doesn't have our Grand Lodge seal on it. What I have here is a summons for jury duty. and I need you to take care of that.
For you?
No, it's a summons for Masonic jury duty.
To whom?
There's a Masonic trial coming up, and somehow I got put on the panel by the Grandmaster, and so I'm belly aching because I don't want to go to jury duty.
What is a Masonic? I know a Masonic trial, but I've never, thankfully, been in one, although I'm kind of surprised.
Different jurisdictions do it differently. In our jurisdiction, once the initial process of leveling Masonic charges against someone is completed, and the committee assigned to that determines that there's cause to move forward, then they put together what's called a trial panel, which the Grandmaster appoints, I think, seven brothers to. So you get your summons in the mail that you have to appear at this time and place, and then that committee or panel hears the evidence and weighs the evidence and decides what, if anything, to do with the accused brother.
Is this an actual trial or a mock trial?
No, it's like a real thing with a local lodge.
How do I not know anything about it? Is this...
I don't know anything about it, and I'm on the panel, so
All right.
I literally just got this today. I have to appear at the end of the month at one of the big city lodges.
Well, I hate to break it to you. I don't know what I can do, and furthermore, at the moment, I don't have much pull with that fella. I know you were there that other night when he was.
Why'd you have
things to
go pissing off the Grand Lodge, Bruce? Now,
did you guys were really there with off- me?
That's what happened.
You guys talked about last time?
Yeah.
I'm noticing the timeline now. I had that. I had that ranting and raving thing I was doing at the district meeting, and made a big scene, cornering and calling out purple people eaters.
Now I'm being summoned for jury duty.
This is harassment. This is what's happening.
Maybe you're the defendant.
No, actually, is it bad that I open this up and I recognize the summons because they use like the letterhead and formatting and I've seen it? As soon as I opened the envelope, that was my initial thought. Like, I had this like heart flutter panic. Like, oh, really?
He was like already dialing my number.
And then I started reading it.
Right. Did the Grand Lodge invite you to come and claim your reward of a free boat?
But you should go and be like such a lawyer, like pull out all the lawyer cards. Like,
I just start issuing, whatever.
I don't know.
I definitely plan to.
Your Honor, I object this case.
I will be the Your Honor, right? Like I'll be one of the judges. So I'll be the one calling out, because I don't actually want to do this because I try to stay as far away from the Grand Lodge's Masonic discipline stuff as possible. Again, out of that sense of self-preservation. I do like the idea of if somebody's going to level accusations at another brother for anything, really, they better have their ducks in a row. Like, I'm not okay with washing someone out of our fraternity based on rumors and hearsay or the fact that we just don't like the guy.
Exactly. See, I know you don't like the idea of you being there, Harlan, but I love the idea of you being there for that exact reason.
That does make a point.
And so, I mean, if the evidence is there, and I don't know, there's no summary of what the charges are, et cetera. I'm sure I'll find that out at some point. If the evidence is there and the guy's a dirtbag, you know, then he doesn't belong here. But I see too many times Masonic trials ending on hearsay and dislike of a particular brother by the other brothers involved. And it's something we should be above. So I will do it's not civic duty, my fraternal duty.
Your fraternal duty.
I will go and serve on this jury thing, which is what people say who are too dumb to get out of jury duty. I'm doing my civic duty. No, you just are too dumb to get out of jury duty.
Plus, it's good practice for when me and you invariably get
summoned
there to a different chair that is not one of the seven, that is one of the two.
So do you think they'll still let me be on the panel when it's us?
Hey, you could filibuster the whole thing. I mean,
sure.
I, I could. I am capable.
You like people that do that kind of stuff, so I'm just saying. Well, sit around and get nothing done. I don't know.
Well, yeah, that government is best, which governs least. That's my my internal philosophy.
I mean, he's filibustered a few shows, so I'm sure.
I have. Actually, there was one where I did that. I did it mostly by distracting Jason with something else. It was kind of like throwing a squirrel out.
And then look at the monkey.
Yes, and then the rest of the show was about that and not about whatever it was I was trying to stop. I don't even remember. We've done the show for far too long now, Bruce. I can't remember. I get messages on Facebook or on IRC or various places where somebody's asking. Jeff is a favorite of this. He'll ask about something we talked about on, you know, episode 94.
Like 2 years
ago. Yeah. And that happens to me on my show all the time. Like, hey, what did you mean when you said this? Like, I have no idea.
I said that?
Yeah. You're like, can you give me a little context? Maybe a refresher of some kind?
Yeah. I mean, I really don't. Because for a long time, we were, well, even still, you know, when you do it every week and we've talked to so many brothers and covered so many things that we rehash a lot of stuff because as vast as our fraternity seems, at some point you probably really have talked about everything.
But you know one thing we haven't talked about?
Tony?
Yeah. Yes. We haven't talked about... Am I pointing at him? Because on my screen I'm pointing at him.
Yes.
On my screen you're pointing to our sidebar.
Well, we have, actually. We have talked about Father Tony at length. It's just a different Father Tony.
Ah, yes.
I'm actually kind of sad that he's not here for this show.
I was looking forward to the confusion.
Yes, our chaplain. That was I had all of that set up too. I had all of these Tony puns and like clergymen and
I'm so sorry.
I'm sure he would come on and put on his hillbilly act too and talk about what is this Gnostic nonsense.
Thumping his Bible.
Yeah.
He may actually play with a snake.
Right.
So, well, since he's not here to do that for us, I suppose the next logical step in this conversation is for you to help us identify, because again, Gnosticism is a label that gets thrown on everything to make it sound more mysterious. What exactly is it with the, I'm going to say this wrong again, the Johannite Church?
Yeah, that's fine.
How does that differ from maybe Bruce's snake handling stuff or Tony's fancy guys in big hats and robes?
Catholic, damn it. Not a whole lot, to be honest with you. I'll start at the beginning. I like to say that Gnosticism, with a big G anyway, is a family of religious traditions. And that Gnosticism, with a small g, is kind of the mystical heart of a lot of, if not all of, the West's religious traditions. The main difference that you'd see between the Johannite Church and the Catholic Church down the street is that we are a little more open to the esoteric. We kind of openly practice quote-unquote magic during the Mass.
Wait, can we go into that? What do you mean?
Sure, so
as opposed to the Roman Catholics who do this.
They do not do magic. Not
open, right. And notorious.
Right. They turn bread into a dude, but it's not magic.
Right.
Yeah. But so anyway, yeah, we're a little bit more out in the open about that stuff. We mentioned the Golden Dawn earlier, there's the Hermetic ritual magic tradition forms a part of our DNA. We, for example, at the beginning of our Mass, we have a section where we invoke the archangels of the four elements to kind of consecrate the ritual space. And then we go on to do what is, from all outward appearances, a pretty standard kind of independent Catholic Mass after that. And then we close the space with the four archangels afterwards.
Yeah, pretty standard stuff. Four archangels, no big deal.
Yeah, well, I mean, it is a church, does it?
No, not a lot of churches do it, but it's definitely part of the Christian mystical tradition, at least from the Renaissance, if not earlier. Mm-hmm. So we're just kind of openly talking about some things that a lot of clergy have done over the years, but had to have been more secret about it.
Mm. Right. Yeah, the orders within the priesthood, I have always heard, practice these very things, but it's something that's reserved for the, well, you have to receive the appropriate orders to do that. Now, some of that stuff is also talked about by Bill Schnobelin about the evil Luciferian inside of the Catholic Church, so take it with a grain of salt.
Yeah, I tend to think that the evil Luciferian inside of the Catholic Church is a whole lot more boring than people think.
Yeah, yeah. Well, but I don't know if you're familiar with Bill Schnobelin. He's a celebrity here on the After Lodge podcast.
I'm not familiar.
Oh, if you want to be endlessly amused, and by endlessly I do mean endlessly, there's countless hours of video on YouTube. You can just look him up. It'll come up real quick. He is a scholar of all things evil, and he is now reformed. Used to be a 99th degree Freemason in the Illuminati. He's also a werewolf. He was a witch. It's a vampire wizard. Sorry. And
do you guys know the story of Leo Taxil?
Yes, yes. But some of our listeners might. Not
I do not.
No.
Oh, okay. This is one of my very favorite stories, and it overlaps with Gnosticism in ways that most Masons don't understand. So I'll share that little bit with you. Leo Taxil was the nom de plume of a French gentleman who, in the late 1800s, published a book about the evils of Freemasonry as a former quote unquote Freemason himself. He published this book about all of the things that the Freemasons were doing, worshiping Satan and sacrificing virgins and all, you know, everything that you hear about the evils of Freemasonry. So they all come from this guy, this guy, Leo Taxil. The Catholic Church put him on a book tour and essentially paid for his vacation around Europe for years and years, where he would go and do lectures and speak to sold-out audiences about the dangers of Freemasonry and how good and pure the Catholic Church was. One of the very important figures of the Gnostic Restoration in the late 1800s was this guy named Jules Dwanel. He is credited as the guy who kind of brought modern ecclesiastical Gnosticism out from the hidden depths of antiquity or whatever, however you want to phrase that. He was the first of the Gnostic bishops to be open in public about being a Gnostic bishop, if you believe his side of the story. And he founded this church, and he went on to consecrate all of his buddies, and male and female, they had male and female bishops in this Gnostic church. And he was very influential and met with a lot of the kind of occult luminaries at the time, and they were all friends hanging out in Paris. Well, this guy got totally taken in by Taxil and renounced Freemasonry, renounced the Gnostic Church, renounced all the esoteric orders that he belonged with, and he followed Taxil around on his book tour. Well, Taxil, after a couple of years of traveling Europe on the church's dime, they kept asking him for proof. Like, the press would go to one of his events and say, "Hey, can you prove that the Freemasons are doing this?" And he says, "Ah, I can bring you the woman who is the high priestess of Freemasonry, Diana Vaughan, who is the daughter of noted alchemist Thomas Vaughan. And she is she's my source, and she can tell you all of the stories about the evil Freemasons." Hmm. So he said, "I'm going to set up a press event, and you know, I'm going to bring Diana Vaughan, and you can all meet her and you can ask her questions." So they have this event. He comes out on stage. He says, "I want to thank the Catholic Church for your generous contribution to my work over the years. I made it all up. Thank you. Good night."
I love it.
Yeah, it's one of my very favorite stories about the history of the fraternity.
Really?
So Jules Dwanel went slinking back to the church he founded, and he left with other people after he renounced all of it. And he said, hey, guys, can I come and play with you again? And they're like, yeah, you can, but you go over there. And so he was not the head of his church when he came back.
Interesting.
Now, Mr. Schnobelin informs us that Taxil was coerced in rescinding his accusations and that they were actually all true.
Well, you know, I wasn't there.
Also, the protocols of the Elders of Zion.
Oh, of course. There they are.
Form document. Yep.
Can't go too far in those circles without the protocols.
So the mission of the After Lodge podcast, beyond spreading the intemperances and excesses of brotherly love to our fellow craftsmen across the world, teaching the After Lodge method of lodge success by illustration, those are kind of side missions. The ultimate goal of this podcast is to one day have Bill Schnobelin sitting in your chair.
That would be awesome.
And the day that we do that will be the last episode of the show. That is the quest that we are ultimately on.
Get your popcorn, everybody.
Yes. At some point, we will become large enough and powerful enough that he can't refuse. And then when he's here, we're going to have the best night of probably most of our lives. And then we'll no longer be able to top that. So there will be no point in continuing the show.
Quit while you're on top, right?
Yes, that is how the show ends. Whether that's 2 months from now, 20 years from now, that is how this will happen.
That is why we toil mercilessly.
Yes. No, really, you have to watch some, or you don't really have to watch them. You can just put them on as background noise if you're like me and you like to listen to things in the background at work. It is endlessly amusing. It's unfortunate that lesser informed people and sometimes brethren fall into that kind of stuff. But if you're sufficiently comfortable in your convictions, then you can find no end of amusement in that guy.
Hmm. All right. I will have to look him up.
You may have to look him up under Rabbi Schnobelin now. He recently became a rabbi too.
Seriously?
Somehow. I think it's that Jews for Jesus thing that he's in, but he's doing that too. He's got the big beard.
Well, everybody needs a hobby, I guess.
It is. I think he does somewhat well financially with this. Like, a lot of these videos are recorded.
Oh, that kills me.
Engagements.
You know, I often say, you know, as a Gnostic Christian priest, as a guy who is fluent in esoterica, you know, I could make a whole lot of money if I were a less scrupulous person.
Good. You could write a book and...
Yeah, and have the Catholic Church fly me around.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, that'd be cool.
Oh, you're talking about going the other way. Yeah, that would make... probably make even more if you went and found the real Jesus, the one in the hills of Appalachia. Then you could compete with Schnobelin for speaking engagements at the Prophecy Club and some of these other like mega churches, especially in the South, that will pay you big money to come talk to their flock.
And then they all
eat it up. And then the next thing you know, some crazy lady that was at your seminar goes and smacks a Grand Lodge official in the head with a hammer.
Yeah.
Yelling Jew at him.
Yeah.
And then maybe you'll feel bad, but I imagine the dollar bills in your pillow will make it all better when you sleep.
Make it all better.
Our church has an annual conference every year, and it kind of moves around to the various parishes. In 2009, it was in Boston, and I hosted it. We took a field trip on our day off to the Grand Lodge. We went and we saw, you know, took a tour and went to the library and stuff. And we're walking down the street, and several of us in our Roman collars, as we do, and this very tall, very imposing gentleman starts screaming at us, "You don't know Jesus! You don't know Jesus!" And we're standing right outside the Grand Lodge, and we're like, well, maybe not. We're going to go in here now. And that did not make him happy at all. What are you doing in there?
Oh, I would have been messing with him.
Wow.
Yeah, we do. Me. He's like, right in here. Come hang out with us.
Yeah. Well, you said Jesus. I meant Jesus. He's a cool dude.
Another thing we brought up before the show was behind you in the background, for those who may have picked it out on the IRC channel already, there is a Mr. Robot mask.
Yes.
And for anyone who hasn't been listening since last summer when season 2 was on, I am a raving Mr. Robot fan.
I had to stop watching it.
That's a big part
missing out.
Well, I work in this. This is my life. So while I get made fun of for being an attorney, what I do is I work in the security field because that's what I did before. And so it was really cool to watch the show. And there's a lot of poetic liberty that's taken, right? It's a TV show, so not everything is spot on. But the way that the folks on that show go about compromising networks and doing the things they do, a lot of that is very spot on, and it's the first television show that's really portrayed that somewhat accurately. And then the story's just really good, and I just get soaked in. Except that I work for E-Corp, if you've ever watched the show. My employer is the real-life version of that company. They are the real Illuminati. They're a global conglomerate that owns everything. So I also could relate in that way. But what you brought up were the Gnostic undertones to Mr. Robot. Mm-hmm. And if it gives me an excuse to go back and watch the first two seasons again, I am all about hearing how you arrive at that.
Sure. Well, I guess I got to start by kind of explaining a Gnostic worldview in order for you to kind of see the connections. Broadly speaking, because you can't really say there is a Gnostic anything, really, because, you know, there's a, like I say, it's a family of religious traditions, and there is as many opinions about Gnosticism as there are Gnostics. We often say you get three Gnostics in a room, you'll get four opinions. The basic story about the Gnostic world, how the world was created according to the Gnostics, goes quickly like this. There is the transcendent universal Godhead who is unknowable and ineffable. Well, not unknowable exactly, but ineffable and unable to be described and oh God, you are so big kind of thing. And this transcendent deity, through a process of emanating itself, created intermediary beings that are called aeons. Now, the degrees to which this is taken literally varies quite broadly. But if we just go with the kind of surface level of the story, it continues thusly. The aeons are pretty much good. They have their place in the cosmic order. And they do their thing. They have names like ecclesia and wisdom and truth and incorruptibility and things like that. You know, all kinds of
enumerate the Sephiroth.
Yeah, similar. So in a very similar way to the kind of outpouring in Kabbalah, right? The transcendent Godhead pours out divinity into the spheres and it trickles down. In more of a I guess you'd say more of a procreative process in the Gnostic story, because in the Gnostic story, each being asks permission from its consort to create a being below it. It's complicated and old-fashioned and weird, but there you have it. Until you get to the very bottom of this series of emanations with the last aeon, Sophia, or wisdom. Now, Sophia, being wise, decides that she wants to create without the permission of her consort. In doing so, in violation of the divine order of things, creates this less than perfect being named Yaldabaoth or Saklus or Samael, it's a demiurge figure. The word demiurge means craftsman, comes from the Neoplatonic, from the Platonic through Neoplatonic systems. Basically, it is a creator deity, not necessarily the true ineffable god, but a kind of mediary god. I see Nick is lost here.
Totally paying attention, man. I understand all of this.
It's difficult. I have
I'm trying to follow
700 videos on my YouTube channel about it. But so this semi craftsman demiurge figure is variously described in different Gnostic scriptures as either incompetent to evil, somewhere on that scale. The demiurge creates the world, creates humanity, and traps humanity in the world, traps the spark of the divine that Sophia lost through her creation of the demiurge, traps that spark of the divine within us, and surrounds it with a soul and surrounds it with a body, so that the spark of the divine is forever separated from divinity, from the ultimate divinity. Now, as a result, Gnostics believe that humans live in this state of kind of sleepingness or drunkenness, or, you know, we are kind of oblivious to the true nature of our own divinity and our connection with the divinity above the world. Very broadly speaking, this is the Gnostic worldview. And our job is to awaken to that spark of the divine within ourselves and to connect with the source, as it were, to use some new agey terms. Now, how that connects to Mr. Robot is Elliot finds himself conflicted. Right, I don't know how many spoilers to give away, but if you haven't seen it by now, Elliot finds himself to be divided, of two minds, so to speak, and this internal conflict within himself keeps him from achieving his true potential. And in that sense, you kind of see the Gnostic everyman struggling to become divine, but being held back by forces beyond his control. In this case, his alter ego and the rest of the world, the police and the FBI and all the other people who are arrayed against him. That's why I say it's the second most Gnostic show on television.
Oh, I just thought he was schizophrenic.
Well, there's a lot of overlap between schizophrenia and mystical experience. Well,
so to bring a little heresy to the conversation, there's a lot of overlap between schizophrenia and a lot of things. I mean, when we look back at the prophets, I'll stick to my own religion since I'm being heretical right now. The prophets all displayed traits that definitely resemble the sort of things that we institutionalize people for in our society today. So that's
a good point.
Yeah, it I don't want to carry that too far.
No, you can get down a rabbit hole pretty quick on that.
Yeah, but I do like bringing that up. But also, thanks for that. That is probably the most succinct summary of the Gnostic creation theology, at least one of them, that I've heard to date.
And therefore, it is wholly inadequate.
It's got a point.
I enjoy the parallels in that story to the themes of the other, I guess what we would call the more just the mystery schools is how I tend to label them.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that's the alchemists or the Kabbalists or the Hermetics. What's the pluralization of that?
Huh. Hermeticist is right. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but broadly speaking, a lot of those central themes about the spark of the divine, and then the emanation of creation, they don't always follow that particular plot or that particular path, but the beginning and the end result seems to be, based on my understanding of all of them, it generally is the same. It's the idea that there's the ineffable source, and that the sparks of that original source exist inside of each and every man, or woman. Let's be egalitarian here. Mm-hmm. Since we were just talking about the singular they, I guess it's no longer appropriate to use man as gender neutral. and the struggle through the various schools or mechanisms or systems to ultimately recognize and reunite with the divinity or the original source, it's a common thread that runs through all of the esoteric or mystery schools, or I just have a really poor understanding of them. I think it's a little of both.
Well, we're in the same boat then, because I agree. There's a lot of various ways of interpreting all of these symbols, and while most Gnostics think that the Demiurge figure is evil, a lot of them think that he's just misunderstood, and that leads to an awful lot of nuance and interesting conversation among even people in my own church who you know, no two Joe and I see the Gnostic worldview in quite the same way. So that's very interesting, an interesting environment. And whether or not you take these stories literally or figuratively, or whether you see specific aspects as completely wrong and stupid, or you know what have you, there's truth in all of it. And if you can see it and you know where to look for it, then if it's useful to you, then use it.
Right. Well, and then Freemasonry being the thread that whenever you hear Masons talking about esotericism, which the grumpy old past masters of our lodge, that's about the time when they leave in the evening before after lodge really kicks in, because they're just not interested in that at all. The old English King James translated version of the Bible is the full, final, and authoritative source of all truth.
In the original English, just like God wrote it.
Yes, with his finger on the stone tablets on Mount Sinai. So outside of, you know, being put down for that, the guys who do choose to dig into this, depending on what lodge you go to or which group of Masons it is engaged in this process, you find that the guys who pull out and they write at length about it, you know, the internet's given us an endless opportunity to dig into this stuff. You'll have guys talking about, well, Freemasonry is really just a recoloring of the old alchemical philosophy. Then you've got another bunch of guys that talk about, well, clearly this is Hermeticism, or clearly this is Gnostic philosophy, or clearly this is Kabbalah, and that somebody went to Israel during the Crusades and the Knights Templar learned Jewish mysticism and made it Christian and brought it back, or whatever. But you can see, just based on the summary that you just gave, how, because these different schools of thought have those very common core threads, Freemasonry has the same common core threads in its ritual. And so I don't have any trouble seeing how, depending on your frame of reference, you can have your own esoteric school of thought. You can look at Freemasonry and say, oh, well, clearly this is that. It's the same thing.
Mm-hmm. That is the beauty. Yeah, that is the beauty of Freemasonry, I think. And whether it was intentional or it just kind of happened organically throughout the development of the craft, I think that being able to see not only these various esoteric systems and symbol sets in Freemasonry, but also any religious tradition at the same time. You know, I think that's one of the reasons why Masonry is open to people of all religions. You know, it's while it's probably pretty easy for somebody from a Judeo-Christian background, you know, the people of the book, to say, oh, okay, I recognize my religion in Freemasonry because we tell stories that come from their books. But you know, the mystical aspects can speak to the mystical aspects in Buddhism or Hinduism or right. Mithraism or Zoroastrianism or any number of isms and entities and whatever out there. It's all in there if you want to unpack it.
Right. And in that ultimate quest for the divine word or the truth or whatever you want to call it, looking at how all of these differing schools of thought, philosophies, religions from all over the world can share these common threads means that's probably the direction we should be looking in, because they're all pointing. Maybe the compass is not pointing 100% correctly, but when you have a whole bunch of them together, compasses, multiple compasses, and they're all pointing in various degrees of being uncalibrated. But when you have a set of them, it starts to point in what should be true north.
Yeah.
And start going in that direction. And that's what Freemasonry enables you to do if you're part of a lodge that has a diverse enough group of brothers who are willing to sit around the table and share these kinds of conversations. You can all benefit and all move further in the quest for ultimate truth by sharing these very sorts of conversations. Hopefully they're a little bit deeper and unfettered when you're with the brothers of your lodge. That's part of the purpose of Masonic secrecy, mm-hmm. is I can be comfortable saying things that I may not be comfortable saying here on the air. But exploring deeper down the rabbit hole. And while my compass with my religion and my background, it's probably going to shoot, if I follow it straight on its own, I'm probably going to miss the North Pole. But if I'm traveling with a whole bunch of guys who all have a different compass, we're all going to pull each other together and ultimately arrive at the closest place we can find. And I really like that metaphor, and I completely just made that up. Write that down, and I'm blogging about it.
Pretty awesome.
Wait, did you really just come up with that?
The thing with the compasses?
Yeah.
And as in the magnetic devices that point north, and there's plural compasses?
Which we all agree that is singular when speaking of just one.
Absolutely.
But isn't it compasses?
No, I'm talking about a magnetic navigation device. There is no argument about whether that's singular or plural. There never has been. And I know you're going to try to start one.
So should this device point inwards towards you or outwards towards the everybody else if you want to wear it on your ring?
It points out. Out. Always out. Always out.
Are we using Mercator projection or something more modern?
Oh, when geography's never been. So, you know, I spent some time in the Army and was trained to do navigation as an officer. And if you ever heard anything about, you know, a lieutenant with a map, you should know that I know nothing about navigation. So I probably couldn't use a compass. I know how to do it in a textbook, but if I were ever leading a bunch of guys, you know, the crusty old first sergeant would take it away and just say, follow me, you dumbass. So that's just how that works.
Well, your metaphor reminded me of something. I do like to troll the, read the anti-Masonry blogs and such. And I don't know if it was Freemasonry Watch or something or one of those kinds of things. I finally kind of came to understand why the Catholics don't like Freemasons. Aside from the financial stuff, but, you know, hand wave. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, Italy has Italians and mafia and, you know, I can say that I'm Italian, not an accidental racist. So they really feel that, and this comes from the Masonic funeral service, which is, of course, public, that they believe that the Masonic funeral service, by stating that, you know, like, this Mason has been admitted to the Celestial Lodge above, forgive me, I don't know the exact words of that, but you know, like, they think that by virtue of being a Freemason, one can be admitted to the Christian afterlife, you know, just by being raised. Now, I have a whole lot of interesting things to say about the symbolism of it, but the kind of anti-Masonic Christian religious crowd, that's where they hang their hat. And your metaphor, I think, kind of wouldn't make them very happy.
Well, no, because that's
the biggest reason they are really reaching.
Well,
the metaphor relies on, so to be able to follow that, it relies on a man first being able to acknowledge that he is not already in possession of the truth, nor are his most of his religious advisors, because religion is a, it's a man created approximation.
Mm-hmm.
If
as the Buddha say, it's the finger pointing at the moon, but not to be confused with the moon itself.
Correct. Or I think in our own symbols, it was we talk about the ancient Egyptians who would use the sun as the symbol of deity, but then the unwashed masses, not knowing any better, mistook the symbol for the thing symbolized and started worshiping the sun. And most people are just not ready to have that kind of awakening, and that's fine, right? It shouldn't be foisted upon them.
Mm-hmm.
And religion is definitely an instrument of value to that, quote, most people who aren't ready to stop and think about, well, this has to just be an approximation. It can't be the distilled truth, because you just can't convey that in a typical religious setting. It's not something that can just be taught by the clergyman on the bima. You can't, it just doesn't work that way. So that's the first step, is you have to acknowledge and be willing to travel with other brothers who may come from a different perspective. Their compass is pointing in a different direction than yours, slightly. And not everybody is equipped or ready to do that. I tend to think that's an ego thing, perhaps. It's part of overcoming your own ego first, realizing that you really don't know anything. I mean, when you compare the knowledge of man, you know, you've got the really enlightened men who stand, you know, 10 feet tall in terms of knowledge of the truth. And then you've got, you know, the guys like me that are a few inches next to that 10 feet. But when you're on the cosmic scale, you know, you're God standing on the moon, looking down at that 10 feet versus 10 inches difference, it really doesn't matter. Neither one of them are tall enough to reach you.
That's why I really love the Gnostic explanation for that. You know, like the metaphor for being asleep. You're asleep and you're dreaming. It's not the sleeper's fault that they're asleep and they're dreaming. That's just the state that they're in. And, you know, even the most ardent student among us can hope to wake up for very brief moments at a time. But then inevitably we get cut off in traffic. We have to pay our bills. The baby's crying, you know, this, that, and the other thing, and right back to sleep.
Yep. That's kind of the world I'm living in now. So I get that. I'm taking a nap, if you will, trying to stir again.
Yeah. Speaking of which, for everybody that keeps up with your family, how is your family doing, Harlan?
So my son he's good. He's home. Things have normalized. So now it's just the normal woes of living with a 2-month-old infant and not all of the added stuff that we had before. Mm. As I'd alluded before the show, you know, we're in the middle of Passover. So, I've had some more time to be home and hanging out with him. And, that's been great. Had him right before the show. He was saying hello to you guys. He's good. His sister is always good. She is a teenager. You know, she's three.
That was going a very long pause in there.
Well, did you say a three-nager?
Three-nager, yes. It's a thing. It's a toddler thing where she's realizing that she can assert her independence. And she has a natural level of independence and sass, if you will, that she gets from some combination of my wife and I. So it's challenging. But it's challenging in a rewarding way. She's very sassy, is just the best word I could come up with. She's expressing her independence, and that doesn't always coincide with what parents need 3-year-old children to do. So
she's like, shut up, Dad.
Yeah, it's a definite back and forth. We often joke that our daughter inherited her mother's temper and her father's mouth, and that's either going to get her into a lot of trouble later in life, or she's going to be Empress of the World, and we're not sure awesome. Which one that'll be.
Good.
because it is a potent combination. I tend to be, you know, a loud mouth and I talk too much and sometimes before I think, and it's just part of who I am. But I am not the type that really gets angry ever. And my wife is the quiet, shy type, but has that that temper that can fuel a thousand suns. So if you could imagine combining those two together, you can picture what I'm talking about. And a lot of you brothers have kids, especially daughters. And so you know exactly what I'm going through. Mm. So I appreciate the thoughts and prayers from everybody. We have not been back inside a hospital since my son came home, and I'm trying to keep it that way. So
praise God.
Yeah. I otherwise wanted to, Brother Tony, I did take some time before the show. I was looking over your website, which is Anthony Silvia, SILVIA.com, for those of you who may be interested.
If you like 4-year-old blog posts.
Yeah, well, so one of the, I used to have a blog on websites I would operate. And what I found is you should never put a date on a blog entry ever.
Yeah.
Because at some point you're going to fall short on regular content updates. And then Google somehow in its search engine optimization, it looks at that. But if you don't have dates on your quote blog entries, then it's not going to penalize your site ranking based on it. And
really,
I just stopped doing blogs altogether because I'm far too lazy to keep up with that. Like, I'll be all excited about it for like 3 months and then.
Yep.
Well, you create weekly content, so it's a whole different skills.
I do, but a blog entry, I'm broadly speaking, if it's done right, requires a lot of, you know, prior research and thought and planning. And this show is something where,
just like a podcast, if it's done right, requires a lot of research and planning.
Well, otherwise, you get a bunch of questions in the chat every week, like, is a new After Lodge episode up? Is a new After Lodge episode up?
So, sorry about that, brother. As I mentioned, it is the holiday season. Happy Easter to my Christian brethren. That's coming up. The Jews among us are already well imbibed in the Pesach wine, and I have had my 4 glasses and will continue to have them. So the show has been stalled from last week, but I will get it up soon, maybe even tonight. And apologize for that. But anyway, what was I talking about? I just completely lost it.
The blog.
Oh, right. What we do on this show is we're trying to promote the After Lodge method of lodge success, which is really just talking with your brothers about anything. Just don't leave when lodge is over. And that's what we do on the show. And so that doesn't require so much in the way of forethought and planning.
Well, I mean, honestly, it really works better for almost nothing, because if you're going to have that atmosphere that you would have in your own After Lodge, like, nobody, you know, goes and studies. So they're like, well, After Lodge, this, whenever I can talk to the guys about this thing, like, maybe if it's some random thing you learned during the week and it's a cool thing and you want to discuss it with somebody, especially if there's somebody amongst the brethren who knows a lot about the subject, that's what it's there for.
Tony does that.
Love about it. Yes.
Tony. Reverend Tony, not Father Tony.
Case, anyways.
Reverend Tony spends ample time researching ways to troll his brothers on various subjects before he comes to lodge.
He does it just to mess with you. He doesn't care about looking good or anything like that, or looking smart or any of that.
But yeah, you don't have to do it that way. So so maintaining a blog for me would not work as well in my current life status as doing the show does. And it's not as much fun, because blog writing is something you tend to do mostly alone, and the show, I get to hang out with you guys. So,
plus we have awesome guests like Tony who have, you know, a worldview different from ourselves and probably most of our listeners. And it's like, that's one of the fantastic things about After Lodge, is talking about guys who are, you know, have this entirely different aspect in some way, and talking about that.
So, AnthonySylvia.com, seven surprising things I wish I knew before I joined the Freemasons.
Uh-oh.
Oh.
Yeah, gosh, I wonder what I said about that.
Well, it just so happens that I still have it up. So,
what's the date on that?
Oh, it is June 20th of 2016. That would be why.
Oh, all right.
Not even a year old.
Wow.
Number. So I'm just going to throw these out because I wanted to.
Can we skip number one?
Number one is it's not really so esoteric, which, based on our whole previous conversation.
Well, if you read further down, I believe I say it's as esoteric as you make it. You know, there's a stratum, I guess you'd say, if that's the word, of Masons, then probably the same percentage of Masons, well, maybe a little higher percentage of Masons than the general population are interested in esoteric subjects than as the rest of the world. So you've got to seek out people who are interested in the things that you're interested in, and the internet is great for that, and podcasts and forums and IRC channels and the like.
One of the things you mentioned to this point is that you've seen, as we've seen, in lodges, particularly with a younger demographic, that these are subjects of much repute, and that I definitely concur with. Let me make sure you actually said this and I didn't just think that up. It ultimately might be the thing that saves the fraternity, which I don't think that you're the first nor the last person to make that assessment, I think a lot of us are on the same page that younger men aren't looking just for social networking because, you know, they've got the Facebook for that, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're coming to Lodge for something deeper than that, something you can't get from the internet or Borders books.
Yeah. I think the downplaying of Masonic secrecy is probably one of the worst things that has happened in the past.
Yes.
50-100 years of Freemasonry, especially, well, in America is what I can speak to, I suppose. That, you know, that if nothing we do is secret, then nothing we do is special. And if nothing we do is special, why the hell would I leave the house?
Right.
Yes. It's not, nothing's sacred at that point. And there are a lot of big, we do a whole show and maybe you can come back and do that show with us. About the value of Masonic secrecy for a whole host of different purposes.
Sure.
And you'll find, I think, where you are, the same as it is here, that it's also the newer generation of Masons. So, you know, those of us with 15 or 20 years or less in the fraternity who take issue with that, hey, stop bashing on the secrecy thing. Stop doing TV documentaries inviting people to film our ritual. Stop.
Right.
I know you think you're doing the right thing, but you are not. This is not encouraging young men to knock on our doors.
Yeah. No, it's like no press is bad press, right? And if the anti-Masons are out there in force saying how all the secret stuff that we do and how awful it is, you know, that's going to generate some buzz. And buzz is okay.
And we want the guys. We want the guys who find Bill Schnobelin on YouTube. They listen to him for a while. They realize what a kook he is. And they probably want to be affiliated with anything that he hates so much. And then they just go check it out because of that.
Like, yeah.
We want those guys. We don't want the guys who watch the BBC documentary. There's one coming out soon. And it's,
yes, or if it's out already.
Or is it one of the other networks?
No, I think it's BBC.
Yeah, it's a documentary. I mean, the cover page and the news article I read, I did read the news article in the BBC, was the, it's a film of a candidate being prepped for initiation. And it's like a photo of that. And it's not a cartoon or imitators. It's actually guys from Ugly. And I don't like that at all.
I wish I didn't. So, and I knew about the ritual before I took it, you know, like I had seen that History Channel thing that came out, you know, 12, 13 years ago. And I, it, it cheapened it for me. It really did. I mean, the brothers in my lodge did a fantastic job with the ritual, and I know it was done well. But you know, like, just having those moments of, oh, I recognize this from TV, it wasn't great.
Right. Yeah. So, but here's the hoping that we can, you know, going forward.
Well, the cat's out of the bag now. There's nothing we're going to do about that.
Well, so it is, but I think, but I don't think that that's any reason that I actually often coach. So I typically take a role in the East when we do the second section of the Master Mason degree. And so part of that is at the very end, I get some time to talk to newly made Master Masons. And one of the things I explain to them is their obligation to maintain the secrecy of the order, just because some of the things have been blown wide open from the internet and, you know, cable television networks.
Yeah.
Does not give us license to just run with that.
Right.
And
here's my take on that. And it's, maybe we're ruining the future secrecy episode, but for me, in all of the various esoteric things that I do, secrecy for the sake of the profane, quote unquote, isn't the point. Secrecy is for you. Secrecy is a practice. Secrecy is a spiritual experience that you undergo as part of your own spiritual development. It doesn't have anything to do with anybody else. It doesn't matter if everybody knows what all of the signs and grips and words and all that are, because they do. They can know those things right now if they wanted to. But the fact that you have something that's so sacred and so important that you promise you're never going to talk about those things ever to anybody who isn't in the fraternity, that is a spiritual discipline in and of itself and worth doing.
It is. And it's a bond that you have with the brothers of your lodge. And more importantly, to the practical side of Freemasonry is the quote safe space situation that we have, where the lodge is a place where, for me, it's probably the only place where I feel completely at liberty to share with my brethren the things that are weighing on my heart. And I need, for a man to be able to do that, he needs to be comfortable with the idea that his brothers are capable of doing that. If you can't keep a silly handshake to yourself, how the hell am I going to trust you with anything that's important to me?
Yeah.
And it's a test of character too. Mm-hmm. So a spiritual exercise, but also a proof of character. Because some of the stuff we ask new guys to keep most protected, some of it's kind of silly.
Mm-hmm.
But I view it as that, you know, if you can't keep this silly thing to yourself, I can't trust you with serious stuff.
Absolutely.
So that's very, very valuable. I mean, we've had men who confide about things that I don't even want to hold up as examples, just dark times in their lives, and they need somebody maybe to help them out, or if not, just someone to listen.
Yeah.
And lodge is a place where they can find that. That's their brothers. So yes, let's hammer on the secrecy thing. And by let's, I mean like everyone listening. If you don't agree, stop listening. or keep listening and we'll change your mind. But we have to move on because Bruce is a milkman, and if he gets the milk out too late, then he gets in trouble. So I can't drag this on forever as much as I'd like to. And feel free to hang around after the show's over. I will do that, but we'll have to move along. The number two point was it's not really taken that seriously. You were talking about the, I don't want to say the majority of our brothers, but I think it is the majority of our brothers who view Masonic ritual and the ancient rites and the things that make Freemasonry as an excuse to get together and come to lodge and have something to do.
Yeah. It's their night out a month, and you know, they just have to get through this stupid ritual thing before they can get to what they really came for.
So I did take a particular note of the, maybe that's later. Yes, that was, I'll save that for riding the goat. no girls allowed This one was interesting for me. This is actually the one that made me want to even bring this up, is that at some point you've started to question the value of male exclusivity.
Yeah. I still have a lot of conflicting thoughts on that. It's I get it. I get what, you know, like a gender homogenous group is like. You know, I've been involved in a lot of kind of organizations like that. I sing in a men's barbershop chorus. I was a Boy Scout my whole life, and while there are women in Boy Scouts, they're not very not as many by a long shot. The questions I have, I guess, are: would the inclusion, the hypothetical, because I don't ever think this would happen, but the hypothetical inclusion of women in kind of quote unquote regular Freemasonry, how much would that actually change the character of what we do? I don't think it would change the character all that much after a while. I think at first it would be disruptive and weird, but.
Well, I think I don't know how long you've been listening to the show. This came up quite a few times, probably earlier on, and we gnashed about this at length, but kind of the view that was shared amongst the hosts, so that included Jason when he was still here, is that I also don't think that including women would at all change the esoteric or the ritual or the purpose side of Freemasonry. But there's that other element, that family, that brotherhood element that the lodge has, which in my mind is almost equally as important. It probably is equally important. That it would definitely impact that because of just biology. Men behave differently when women are around than they do when they're not. And that whole thing I was saying about, you know, confiding in your brothers about something you've got going on, a lot of times that probably involves your wife, and it may be an issue that women generally would not be as willing to just let you vent about as, you know, men would. I actually have zero issue with the idea of if there was another Grand Lodge of Freemasonry and our Grand Lodge wanted to spin it off and charter it and teach the ritual to some women and let them,
or just recognize existing Co-Masonic lodges, or yes, you know, any number of other options. Yeah.
Well, recognition comes with it doesn't have to, I guess, because some states have done the Prince Hall recognition without visitation thing. Because recognition invites visitation, and that's kind of what I'm.
I see. To avoid. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I have no. It doesn't challenge my male ego at all to think that women can be Freemasons. I just don't like the idea of having women Freemasons who can be in my lodge.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Sure. I definitely hear you, and that's why.
You go to public parades and cornerstone layings and all that stuff and appear together and be. I don't really have any issues with that. I just think that the gender, the homogenous gender space that Freemasonry creates is a very valuable part of what we do. And maybe women, I don't know, I'm not a woman, maybe they would think the same way. If there was an all women Grand Lodge, they wouldn't want men there.
I know what you're saying, and like I say, I'm conflicted about it. I don't have any I don't want to make any pronouncements or advocate for any changes. I'm a New Englander. I'm kind of a big lib. I have a more progressive kind of take on these kinds of things. You know, I have strong feelings about gender essentialism that we don't necessarily need to get into right now. But I'm also a person in the world, and I recognize what the world actually is and how we actually. Yes. Interact with one another, and so that's why it's a very difficult situation.
I mean, Freemasonry is not the only place to struggle with this. I mean, yep. We've gone through it with country clubs. We've gone through it with sports. Society goes through these issues with just about everything. Like, egalitarianism is the way forward, but there's got to be some way that we can accomplish that without simultaneously destroying some of the very valuable things that come with all male institutions and all female institutions, but I wouldn't know because I've never been in one.
Sure.
There's value to that. Like, ultimately, as long as we have socially distinct genders, I mean, maybe one day when we live in Star Trek land and, you know, every officer is sir regardless of their gender and, you know, that distant world that doesn't exist right now, maybe that's not a thing, but the way that we as social creatures exist today, I think that gender safe spaces, if you will, are something of value. And I could be wrong. Maybe Freemasonry doesn't need that, and that could be reconstructed somewhere else. Maybe you've got, you know, the Grand Lodge that's gender diverse, but then it has some sort of sub-organization just for men and women, but same thing.
Yeah.
You're still going to have these exclusive groups.
Hey, if it were easy, we'd have solved it by now.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, and it's been done before. Regular Grand Lodges have initiated women in the past. I mean, there's very, very, very few, but it's happened. And I don't think there's any spiritual reason why it would be invalid. Other than being a landmark, if you think those are spiritual. I don't, but I think the big thing is with it being a landmark, you're right, I don't know that this is a discussion that's really going to carry any weight for a very long time. Of course, I say that, and then the French have been doing it for 100 years or more, so... but they're the French. politics... of course, the two things forbidden to discuss, politics and religion, but then Freemasonry has its own internal politics.
Really? I hadn't noticed.
Yeah. Oh, Bruce and I have become intimately familiar with Masonic politics of late. our lodge is currently struggling with... some Grand Lodge politics, and we've been avoiding getting into it on the show, but we are immersed in exactly what you're talking about.
Politics is doing that justice, Arlen.
Yeah, it's not, but I'm just going to move on because whenever we start getting into that thing, I really just want to go on a rant, and that will not be good for my membership. people think we're a bit silly or evil. Maybe... there's some parallel there of 0.5 to be drawn with the bottom ladder of creation that you were describing earlier, where you're not sure if Samael is incompetent or evil.
So the Freemasons are either incompetent or evil. Those are the only two options.
It's a social.
I mean, I've been called both.
We are the symbolic archons. That's I don't know. I'm trying to draw parallels wherever I can. but we can simultaneously be both. We can absolutely be evil and incompetent. It's like cartoon villains from mid-century America, right? Like the bad guys were always evil and incompetent. And Superman would just decimate them with his American style and wit.
Or the road runner, just by nature of being himself, would let the coyote...
Well, but was the coyote actually evil? I mean, he was just trying to eat. That's
yeah. It didn't look like
there was a little bit of vindictiveness to there.
Well, yeah, yeah, I guess there was. Point number six was the other one. So really, the big two I had was the gender thing, and then the riding the goat. So this is an issue that I remain torn on. To this date, I still haven't found a personal resolution. And it's the, well, I guess what you would have to refer to as the hazing of new brothers, particularly in the third degree. And I definitely concur that, especially in our jurisdiction, I won't speak for others, it frequently gets carried beyond the point of value. It goes much further than it needs to. Again, on that all-male institution bonding brotherhood thing, sometimes what we refer to as hazing still serves a purpose in that cementing somebody as part of the group. And I've had this constant conflict on it. I think where I kind of sit now,
there is a little bit of value to it. Absolutely.
I think where I kind of sit now is if we could accomplish the way our jurisdiction does it now, and we are a lot more, expressive. Let's go with that than some other jurisdictions in the third degree ritual. It's a very hands-on exercise. I don't know that I would really want to see that diminish so much as I would want to see the goat noises and the cat calls and the giggling and the jokes to see mm-hmm. that stuff go away.
I'm a big proponent of fear in initiation rituals. I think that this is a very powerful, it's a very powerful emotion to stimulate and will absolutely cement that experience in your psyche. Yeah. I think that you can do that without being ridiculous about it. I think that you can do it without being, you know, flat out violent about it. There are a lot of ways to make somebody, you know, feel like this isn't maybe entirely safe, but it's still entirely safe. You know what I mean?
Yes. And we do, like most jurisdictions, including the one you cited in your blog, where there's an order that has to be read from the Grand Lodge about, you know, not letting this stuff get out of hand. We not only have that.
Don't be a dick, resolution.
We don't have to read that, but we do have to have responsible parties present at all Master Mason degrees who are responsible to the Grand Lodge for if they're present, they can't let things go further than what's acceptable.
Right.
But I think if you could picture a situation where you had one of those hands-on Master Mason degrees, but during the ceremony, there were no goat jokes. There were no provocations of the new brother. There were no giggles or the boisterous laughter going on. But at the
comments
same
time, on the sidelines about how awful the junior warden's doing, you know.
But if you could have that, like that utter silence, except for the ritual that's happening, but also have that attention getting, if you will. Mm-hmm. So not it does get carried overboard, but I think there's some value to an extent of getting a man's attention. Like this is the real deal. Like
the value of the thing that we're not talking about, the one specific thing that we're not talking about is the surprise of it. It isn't the force of it. It isn't the, you know, like,
I'm actually talking about the entire journey through the ritual. We are very hands on the entire time.
Okay.
The ending.
We are New Englanders. We do not touch each other.
The capstone is actually probably it's very anticlimactic in our jurisdiction based on what you've been through prior to that point. And I think that's the stuff that sometimes gets a little too far, but it's a fine line because I do see the value in, again, you're using fear and ritual. By the time you get around to the end of that portion of the ritual, if you're taking a hands-on approach, if you will, you've got the guy's attention. You've instilled the excitement in the mind of I am paying attention because this is the real deal. This isn't somebody telling a story. This is the story.
Right. And the brothers didn't make 6 or 8 jokes about it before I even got dressed. And you know, like I was in the ante room getting changed for my initiation, and people were coming in telling me about, all right, well, do you got the knife? Yeah, you got the knife. You want to, you know, make sure that we got the sponges to wipe up the blood. And
we have that too.
Yeah.
I try to contain it, but I've almost given up. And the reason I've almost given up is the worst offenders in this case tend to be men who I have zero fraternal authority to challenge. And by that, I mean, they're the 80-year-old guy that's been doing Freemasonry since my dad was born.
Yep.
And they're past grandmasters. They're men that I just don't have the credibility, if you will, to influence them to behave differently.
Yep. Yeah. Well, it's
one new of guys I often harp on about this with, because in their eyes, I have a little more authority to say that. But then they see the old guard doing right. it, and then they're like, "Well, that's just Harlan."
Yeah, I one of our volunteers at the for the podcast that I do. His name is Andre Beliveau. He's the Worshipful Master of Port Jervis Lodge, number 318 in Port Jervis, New York. He is. They essentially revived a dying, pretty much dead lodge in his area, and he is kind of attempting to remake it in a more serious and a bit more esoteric vein. So, so imagine an initiation experience where the candidate shows up to lodge and is shown directly to the room. Nobody speaks to him. He's given the briefest of instructions, told to sit there and wait in silence and in darkness until it's time for his initiation. Some menacing, imposing dude in a tux comes out, grabs him, you know, goes to the door, does the thing. That I think that creates a sufficiently profound environment for the initiation that the, yes. Well, I think we agree. And the jokes and the, who's
the one. I love the chamber of reflection thing. My other lodge, which is a much smaller, less active lodge because it's a traditional observance lodge that's still building. One of the things that we frequently do is on initiation night for a new entered apprentice, he doesn't come to lodge. Like, we have two very imposing gentlemen in black tuxedos. Oh, come and get him. They go to his house.
Yeah, I love that.
Black sedan.
What?
They knock on his door. Usually his wife or whoever is there when they, and they very solemnly, you know, he knows that this is the night and he's just supposed to wait on them to come pick him up. Generally, he's not expecting like these two men to roll up in a black sedan and imposing figures, tuxedos, very seriously. We've had a very positive feedback from men who've become Masons with their first step involving that. Because what happens is we then drive them back to the lodge.
Mm-hmm.
They come in through a side door, and they're left in the chamber of reflection. So they haven't met any of the brothers yet. They usually have, because they've hung out with us, because you don't just get a petition in this lodge. But they haven't met any of them that are there. They haven't seen anybody except the two men that brought them in. And so they're not thinking about who is this guy or that guy or what have you. All they're thinking about is, I'm being initiated and made a Freemason tonight.
Yeah.
Because we haven't given them anything else to think about.
Mm-hmm.
And solemnity is key here. and the goat stuff and the goofy stuff, it takes away from that.
Yep.
Imparting upon, especially a new candidate, that this is a serious thing. Is important, and you know, like y'all said,
because if it's not serious,
you can do that, but then they're not going to care,
right? If it's not serious, if you're not showing the candidate it's worth something to you, then why would it be worth something to them?
Right.
We did experiment with the first time we did this. We actually hoodwinked the guy before he got in the car.
And the police were called, and
right while he appreciated the experience, and again using fear and ritual, sometimes it's another paintbrush in the kit, right? You use it sparingly.
Mm-hmm.
He appreciated that, and he thought it was awesome and wanted to delve in immediately. His spouse was not so appreciative, so we stopped doing that. Just. Because of public appearances. We don't want a man's spouse to have an unfavorable opinion of the fraternity. And in hindsight, like, we should have seen that coming. We were so excited about our first entered apprentice at our new traditional observance lodge. That was all we could think about.
Yeah.
And then afterward, the master made this apology, like, sorry guys, I probably should have saw that coming. This is on me. As I understand, he spoke to our new brother's wife and said, we understand why that was unseen, and we've actually decided not to do that anymore, and we promise it's all fine. So
don't worry about the new tattoo. It'll heal in a couple of days.
Don't worry about the bruises.
Yeah.
And then jumping to the last one we've got, is you get out what you put in, which is a summary of what we try to do here on the podcast. Is we the most frequent question asked in online venues that we are part of, the guys here on the After Lodge podcast, tends to be along the lines of, I joined Masonry, my lodge is dead, I don't know what to do, this is kind of dumb, or, you know, I'm trying so hard, but I can't get other brothers involved. Usually it's along those lines.
Yeah.
And our response is consistently that, in our opinion, it begins with the After Lodge method of lodge success. You have to cement a brotherhood. You can't have a country club of guys or whatever it is. You can't just have a club that you go to a meeting and then those are the guys from your club.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to build the kind of place where it's not just the guys from the club. Those are your brothers, and our wives know each other. And when somebody's in trouble, like, everybody's there. In our lodge in particular, we usually joke with new guys about, you know, the guys you see hanging around after lodge, these guys are the core of your lodge. And if you called them to help you hide a body, the only question they would ask is, whose car are we driving? While we say that in jest, given my time with my lodge and how tight we are, I don't know. It's never happened. Nobody's ever called to ask to hide a body. I don't actually know what would happen.
Mm-hmm.
I am starting to think that maybe that's not actually a joke, that most of those guys might show up with a bag of lye and a shovel and say, where are we going? And
to the NSA who is listening in, this is all hypothetical.
I mean, it's never happened. None of us have killed anybody. What I'm illustrating is the bonds of brotherhood being that tight, it's something unparalleled, at least in our community. I can't think of any other group where you're going to find a group of men who are cemented as tightly as the guys in the local Masonic lodge.
Well, clubs are a dime a dozen. You can join any club and go hang out in any. You want to join any of the critter clubs and go drink at the bar or whatever. That's, you know, anybody can do that. Masonry is different. Masonry should be better.
It is. That's intimidating to people who aren't part of the craft. Our late original master of my other lodge liked to tell the story about while he was visiting Germany, and the lady he was staying with in some hostel or bed and breakfast or whatever noticed his ring, which I guess isn't common to wear in that part of Europe, and mentioned, oh, you're a Freemason. And then she was kind of taken aback, and she said, oh, blood brothers, you guys would do anything for each other. And then, like, she seemed kind of suspicious about him the whole rest of the time he was there with, like, anybody that came to see him or what have you. And there is that impression. Maybe that's the impression we want when you're talking about Masonic secrecy and the allure to younger men, is that recognition in the world that, you know, the Masons are these guys. They're the guys who are bound together by something you can't understand unless you're part of it. But you want that. You want to be...
As long as you have a penis.
Well, yes. And I realize that that's dangerously close to the same logic that leads young teenagers into drug gangs. But it's different, mostly because what we're doing is a little more wholesome than running heroin.
Yeah.
A little.
But it is the same impulse. Like, I guess I can't deny that. It's that desire to be part of the group and have that brotherhood. So Bruce, there's our option is, if this trial thing I've been summoned to ends up being for us at some point, we could always go, join a smuggling gang. Somehow I feel like they're not having arguments over riding the goat and whether that's,
I mean, I'm in. Let's go.
Yeah.
We don't even need to wait for a trial. Can we go right now?
I don't know so much. In the neighborhood that we live in, the local gangs are not too friendly to my people. So I don't know that I would fit in so well.
In the neighborhood you live in?
Well, I'm just, yeah.
Come to mine.
Oh, yeah, I guess. Yeah, how is that? How do I live, like, out in BFE and you live where all the Jews do?
happenstance, I guess. I don't.
It's just kind of ironic. Like, I'm out here with the well, there's not a huge Catholic presence here either. I guess it's mostly the old school Baptist. Tony, I live in one of those neighborhoods where there are more churches than houses, and they all have like
all of the members, right? Yeah,
yeah, and it's all, and there's like every adjective you can find in the dictionary plus Baptist.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, one is the Apostolic Baptist, and the other one's the Free Will Baptist, and there's the General Baptist, and the Southern Baptist, and the Old Time Baptist, and that. The like list that, goes on and on and on.
Like that Henry Ford quote about the Model T, you can get it any color you want as long as it's black. You can go to any church you want as long as it's Baptist.
Yeah, and it's like an amoeba thing around here. Like, a church will start experiencing some success, and it will grow. It'll reach a critical mass, which I just, on my observations here locally, seems to be about 50.
Mm.
And then something happens and it splits like an amoeba.
Yeah.
Somebody starts that.
There was a sociology researcher who pegged that number at 72 or something like that. I forget who it was, but it was an interesting study. And, you know, it said like human social groups are about 72 people max. And once you get bigger than that, it becomes unwieldy and you get a split.
You know, that. I've heard that before as well, like the Masonic Restoration Foundation, so the group that certifies, quote, traditional observance lodges.
Yep.
One of their rules is that once your lodge reaches 50 members, it's capped. That's your cap. You got to start another lodge or something.
Yeah.
And it's based on that same idea that a human social group cannot reliably consist of hundreds of brothers and still have the same bonds.
Yeah.
That group of 50 would have. So yeah, I get that.
Who's the brother on the Masonic Roundtable who's done all the research on the population declines in Masonry? It's one of them. I'm terrible with names.
I can't remember. I know that wasn't Nick, and really Nick's the only guy I know very well from that show.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I saw him speak once, maybe a year ago now, and give his presentation on you know, the decline of Masonic membership and how we are declining to pre-Civil War numbers, and how he says this is not an artificial decline. This is a return to normalcy. That the boom is the aberration of the
statistics. I think you're quoting David Riley.
I mean, in the history,
yeah, possibly. Well, I know David, but I saw the presentation from one of those guys whose names I'm sorry.
That's a thing that I take to heart as well, is that it is abnormal for there to be this many Freemasons. And given the span of history of hundreds of years, it's only been the past 80 or so where it's been these staggering numbers. And it's going to be a painful return. It already has been. It's going to continue to be.
Lots of beautiful buildings are going to go for sale.
I mean, the numbers that we had before, what enabled us to have all of these appendant bodies and all of these things that we've gotten involved with and the infrastructure we've built, and we're not going to be able to support them. And in my mind, nor should we need to support them, but that's just my opinion, is that Freemasonry should be about Freemasonry and not about 70 different organizations that are attached to it. And I say that as a very devoted Scottish Rite Mason. My journey in the Scottish Rite exists only because I couldn't, in the beginning, find that in my own lodge.
Mm-hmm.
Had my lodge when I joined been what it is today, I probably would never have ventured out into anything else. I'm glad I did. I've enjoyed the Scottish Rite, and I really think you would too. You should look into it if you ever get the opportunity.
Oh, yeah. Someday when my wallet can absorb some more dues.
Oh, yeah. There's that. I'm not a York Rite Mason. I just have my lodge in the Scottish Rite, and that's, well, then there's the Past Master Society and all that other stuff, but that's all Blue Lodge related.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's just the Scottish Rite, and I am actually at the end of my term as the commander of the council there. So at the end of this year, I won't have so much obligation there. And I predict that I will not seek out any further obligations there, because I'm very content with my own lodge and what I'm getting out of it now.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I wasn't so much 10 years ago when I started with the Scottish Rite. So it's, our lodge is another story like the one you've told of a lodge that was about to close its doors and we had some new guys and we wanted to not let that happen. And so we started practicing some of the stuff we've been talking about on the show. And it paid dividends in very short order and just snowballed from there to the point where now we are, we're a double-edged sword for the local Grand Lodge. They love the idea that our lodge is initiating and retaining more new men than just about anyone else, that you know, we're quote on fire and doing all these things, but we're also a cosmic pain in their ass because the nature of what we do is so much more progressive than our jurisdiction wants to be at this point. We are constantly bucking the system.
Well, they want new members, but they don't want us to do the things that create new members.
Yeah. Oh, hey, like, go and get us some new members.
That's the easiest way to explain it.
No, not like that.
Right, exactly. Go do this thing. No, do it different. Okay, well, yeah, how do you want us to do it? Just do the thing.
We need to advertise our fish fries more, and we need to do more TV documentaries, and we need some billboards, and
you know what we
damn
could
it, stop
do
what you guys are doing.
Give out sunshades to new initiates.
Yeah, but no, don't really stop what you're doing, because, you know.
Hey, like that'd be cool. Growing.
Sunshades?
You trying to get some After Lodge swag going on?
Oh, yeah. So, Bruce, I forget that the sunshade thing was mostly the pre-36 episodes.
That was episode one, man.
It was. That's what started the show, was the Grand Lodge of Pennsylvania offering sunshade for petitioners.
They were running a campaign. Well, it wasn't to the petitioners. It was to existing brothers for anybody who brought in somebody got a free sunshade.
Because we were doing it before, part of this, because we love masonry.
Exactly. So now this is the reason you're going to bring somebody into Freemasonry, is to get a sunshade. Not because you think you would make a good mason. Not because this guy wants to join. It's for the sunshade.
Episode one. That was what started the show.
Good stuff.
Like, well over 3 years ago. So anyway, I know that we've run out of time, and feel free, gentlemen, to hang around afterward, but I think we're going to have to wrap this up. I would love to carry on for hours yet, but and if you've listened and you've heard me talk about how in the hell can I end up at Lodge until 2 a.m. or later in the morning, well, this is how it happens.
This is how it happens.
Because I don't have a clock that we have to meet, and so we just sit there until we get too tired to keep going. So anyway,
if only I kept more human hours.
Yeah, well, you know, carrying the milk is a devoutly American job, Bruce. You're an American hero. Aww. And
mom and apple pie.
Yes. Does anybody have anything particularly cool coming up that they want to talk about, or
no? Nope.
Tony, did you want to since you've spent well over an hour on the show, do you want to plug your podcast or anything else?
Sure. Peddling
of wares you may want to do is kosher at this point.
I love plugging things, and thank you all for turning off the podcast already. So if you are at all interested in esoteric spirituality, Gnosticism, the occult, quote unquote, please visit GnosticWisdom.net. That is my video/podcast media empire.
Media empire.
such as it is.
Strong word.
And hey, I have to give myself a little bit of ego boost every now and then, or else I won't keep going. And we have hundreds and hundreds of hours of content already, and more great stuff to come all the time. So that's that, and that is that's my kind of ministry for the Joe and I Church. That's my main job for the church, is to produce that stuff. I have just recently taken on a business partner for my kind of t-shirt design business, which focuses on
esoteric, Masonic, and kind of some religious t-shirt designs. And so if you want some cool shirts, at least I think they're cool, it's a Vitriol Design Shop, and the URL is vitriolshop.com.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Buy some sweet shirts. I did peruse that site, and there's a lot of cool-looking shirts on there.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
If I were a wealthy man, I'd buy them all.
Yeah, we may, Bruce, that might be something to look at. I know the prices are already steep because I understand small production and how that works. I know why they're steep. Is something to offer in our cabinet at the lodge.
We
could print out, we could probably print out some of those designs and just put the order forms in there. We've got a few brothers who would lap that up. They would fill out an order form and then I guess we could just,
I know more than a few brothers somehow from our lodge who would buy them if they were hanging in the case there.
Or we may just get a flyer and stick it up there. All the brothers who would buy those are internet savvy. So
let's chat a bit more after we come to a close here, but we have, we're working on a solution to that because we understand that running shirts in bulk is a lot cheaper, and we want to help out lodges who want to who maybe want to have their own custom design and stuff like that. So
yeah,
that's cool. Not quite ready for prime time yet, but we're talking about it. So
Nick, fix it.
Yeah, right.
All right.
Do all of the things.
If there's nothing else, then. Father Sylvia, thanks for joining us.
Yes, we really appreciate you coming on.
Father, it was my distinct pleasure.
Yeah, it's been a blast, and happy early Easter to our brothers out there. Good Pesach to those of you who have already been drunk one night and will be safe for several more. I jest a little. It's the Exodus is a little more than drinking wine, but it is my favorite part, I'm not gonna lie. So I guess that's it for episode 163 of the After Lodge podcast. You can find the show notes for this or any previously published episode at www.afterlodge.com. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter at After Lodge. Shoot us an email at afterlodge@gmail.com. Hang out with us on IRC at irc.snoonet.org. #FreeMasonry, where you can find the link to the live stream when it happens, usually on Tuesday nights. You must be present to win. Of course, the best place to find us, as always, is on the Freemasonry and After Lodge subreddits. So until next week, brothers, may the sun shine in your face and the wind be at your back.
Good
night.
Come back. Stop and ask the question. Like Nachman, I lose the vision. Enter to the fog, driving down this mountain to the ocean floor, where you've never gone before. Open up the door to a room you've chosen to ignore. Swimming in the ocean of fear, you've been swimming in the ocean of fear, through the unknown and the unclear, through the unknown and the unclear. Fear of your life, fear of your knife, could open as tight as this world that you made. Examine the side. Take up and take out, shake up and shake out, shake it off, gotta shake up the vibe. But in the speed of light, you've been searching. You've been moving out of your life. You've been reaching. You've been running out of sight. You've been seeking. Disappearing into the light. Into the light you've been taken to. Breaking up the paved road that you made. Entering the maze, fear of the strange, fear of the waves as they crash. Once son of a longing, once felt like a trophy that you won and kept it on the mantle. Time to dismantle, get a handle, taking off your sandals, lighting up the candles. Now you're living in shambles. Ramble on with the bros, ramble on with the bros. Cons can't hack it with my jacket. Causing a racket, take a crack and crackle. Tackling competition with the mission, living with the vision. Or touch the moonlight. Wake up and walk out. Take up and take out. Shake up and shake out. Shake it off, gotta shake up the vibe. You've been traveling the speed of light. You've been searching. You've
all of your life. All of your life, all of your life. You've been traveling at the speed of light.